Thank you for coming back.
We've had a lot of fun playing Cheeselander while you've been away.
It's perhaps the greatest game in the world. It plays a wonderful sound when you win, but no one's ever heard it because no one's ever won. We actually have, if I go back to the slides just for one brief instant, we can sort of round this off. I want to go sound effects and XNA, please. Yes, okay. I know all about that. So making sounds loop. Effectively, what I want to do is have my engine sound play continuously. And you want to do this for as little effort as possible. And it's just a question of setting a property on the sound effects instance to say, please loop sound. And I just say, is looped equals true? And at that point, my engine will play continuously. And so I just started going, and it'll keep on playing till I pause it, or I stop it. Pause means stop in the middle of the sequence and play it. And then resume from that point. Stop means restart from the beginning if you play it again. And what I'll do now is I'll just show you on the little camera. I'll not bother running the program, although of course it works perfectly. If I've modified Cheeselander, which you can see here, to actually support touch input as well. So if I touch this in the middle, you can hear the sound effects speeding up and slowing down.
Oh, you're going to win.
Oh, come on, we're getting there. Can you guys see that? That was so exciting. We nearly won. But now it'll be playing for ages. Come on. You can do it. This is so exciting. Oh, no, we missed. But it's all one sound sample being repeatedly played. Still missed. Right, life goes on. You can't always win the games that you play, even if you write them yourselves. In fact, one of the things that annoys me greatly about writing video games is I'll write a video game.
You hear that crash.
I'll write a video game, and then everyone else will beat me at it. Mm. But I know how this is. It's a bit like being an English footballer. We invent the game, okay? We then send it to the world, and they come back and they beat us at it.
They play it better than we
do. Absolutely. Yeah. So do be prepared for that. The road of being a game developer is a hard and painful one. And one of the most painful things is seeing somebody else actually beat you at your own game. Hate that. But anyway, in terms of the plot, download Cheeselander and just lift that code and it'll work a treat. And again, you can actually have multiple voices playing. You need to be careful. The play effect, play method on sound effect will return false if you can't play it. And you need to watch that. I wrote a game that played fantastically and sounded great on the Xbox and the PC, dropped it onto the Zune in this case, not the phone, but they're kind of similar in terms of their limitations in this respect, and half of the sound had gone, and so I effectively had to manage. I had a little pool of sound effects, and I reassigned the sound playback to them on the fly so that the really important sounds got played. The engine sound, for example, never stopped because it ran out of places it could play. So do keep that in mind. It's one of the areas where the phone does actually differ slightly. A very, very quick recap on sounds in Silverlight. The point I want to make here is that you can use the sound effect instance to get looping sound and continuous repeated play in Silverlight programs too. So you just do how we did this before. Bring in the framework library, add the namespace, and keep on calling update to keep things going. It really is as simple as that. Quick review.
Right.
So eyes down, okay. First thing, XNA sound playback supports only one voice at a time. Andy will now give the standard colours.
Purple, please, if you think that statement is true, and yellow if you think that statement is false.
I like watching the colours change. Oh, lots of the right colour. Thank you. Lots of yellow. Okay, so you're all completely correct. We can play back more than one voice. So you're going to get a red for that, and we're going to pick a yellow person and give them a prize.
All right. So let's go down to... towards the bottom of the seating plan. Let's choose somebody down here. Leif Beaton.
LeifBeaton.
Yeah, so, as before, please, private question.
Private message.
And we'll get the prize to you. Thank you very much.
Okay, next question. Sound effects are played by the content manager. That's one of these evil kind of student multiple choice questions. Actually, it's false. Because sound effects are loaded by the content manager, but they're played by the play method on the sound effect itself. So that one's going to be red. MP3 files cannot be used as sound effects, so that's going to go red. The sound effect instance class provides a handle on the sound. Indeed it does. That's exactly how it works. So I'm expecting Mr. Green to drop around for that one. You can stop and start playing sounds. Indeed you can. More green. And the final one, I think I've already asked this question once in the Silverlight context, and it's still true. You use the same sound playback technology whether you're using the Silverlight behaviour or the XNA behaviour. They're shared between the two. And so that's effectively sound. So now you can do looping sounds, you can fiddle with playing sounds, and you can actually control their playback really rather nicely. So
if you put your seats back to green, please, and
go back to green, and we'll continue on with the motley, as the saying goes. And this is a really interesting topic. It's always best to big yourself up, okay? Right. This is a good one. This is how you make your games really unique and special. And I've got a couple of chunks of sample code, which might work. But it's all on the phone anyway. So if I'm not daft enough to load it again, it'll work fine. So keep on moving forward, Robert. That's the thing. And keep taking the tablets or try a different strength. So touch input on the phone, how you get the inputs, how you work through the touch events and deal with them one at a time, and how you use touch events to flick things around the screen. Quite a few games use this behaviour where you flick something and it travels in a particular direction. I'm going to show you the code to do that. So you can think in terms of games that flick things, and you can change that behaviour to drag things around for shuffle puck type games and all that kind of stuff. So stick with me, that's actually worth knowing, and the code provided will see you quite well. So touch input on Windows Phone. Very, very easy to use. As far as you're concerned, update fires. You then ask the system to give you a list of all the active touch events. There will be a maximum of 4 of these on the standard platform, and they all describe a particular touch action. Okay? The nice thing for XNA programmers is that each event is uniquely identified over its lifetime. So you can tell if you get a touch down event, you can then track that event through. If touch goes down, we then actually drag, we get lots of touch moved events, and touch goes up. It's really like having 4 separate mice, which you can uniquely identify. You can get mouse down, mouse moved, and mouse up kind of thing. And in fact, if you have a Windows 7 system with multiple inputs, like either a multi-touch monitor or multiple mice, you can actually emulate multi-touch using multiple mice on your emulated version on the PC. It will probably be a fairly nutty thing to do, but it is possible to do that. So,
but also, if you happen to have a Windows 7 touch, like a tablet, I believe the emulator, you can use touch events in there. It just works anyway, so without having to have multiple mice plugged in.
Multiple, price of a mice, $5. Price of a touch input thing?
I know, but you know.
Okay, right. We'll fight that one out later. But yeah, as far as we're concerned, the good news is that it's very easy. There are other platforms out there which don't have this ability, which means that you have to figure out where the touch has moved to since the last update call that you got, which is much harder work. In the case of XNA, that hard work's done for you automatically, and it makes touch really easy to use. So it's just the same as the Zune HD. Okay, so all my code that did flicky games and things on the Zune just went straight across and worked really well. And so if you do want to test touch, and touch is one of these things that you have to test on a real platform, you can fake a bit of it with the mouse, but you're never going to get how it really feels until you put it on a real physical thing. And so if you can get hold of a Zune HD for a while and play with that, and then lift the code up and drop it into your Windows Phone thing when you get the phone device, that's not a bad way to travel. It's a good place to test things out. And so getting touch events, here's how to do it. There's basically 3 states you can get for your touch event, pressed, released, and dragged. Like I said, up to 4 input points. That didn't sound very many until I realized that you're holding it with one hand, and so you really only want to use 4. And what happens is your game requests a list of currently active points, and it can then iterate through those and see what's actually happening on the platform. And we have, if you're an XNA person used to getting the state of the gamepad or the keyboard or the mouse, this model slides across and works a treat on the phone device as well. We ask the touch panel to give us the state information, and we store that in a member variable in the game somewhere. The interesting thing about touch state, though, is it isn't a single thing, it's actually a list, because there may be more than one touch event active at any given time. And so a bit of code then, we effectively can iterate through. But what I do, the simplest one, when I was playing Starlight, to move from the attract screen to the gameplay screen. I just want a touch event of some kind. So the simplest possible way you can use the touch screen is to say, has it been touched? And that's very easy. Get the touch state and see how many items you have in the list. And if it's empty, if the count is zero, then there's nothing. If it's bigger than zero, the screen's been touched. And so if you just want to do touch to move on or whatever, this code will work a treat. There's no need to worry any more than that. And that'll let you sort of detect individual sort of he's hit the screen kind of stuff. And so that's fine, that works. And I can't get my down button to work. Come on, speak to me. No, really, I can't. What's happened? I've got a... Oh, there you go.
Right.
Did you do that?
No, it wasn't me. It must have come to life.
Basically, there's something out there which is targeting Robert for grief. Okay, someone's fired their grief laser at Robert's head. I'm going to wake up in a cold sweat. Assuming I get to sleep and think about this little demo sequence. Okay, I can work through these things using for each. And each time I do that, I can get myself a touch location instance to take a look at. And so I work through them and look at each touch event in turn. Or I can just use a subscript to pull them out. That's the way. But I just tend to work through them and see what each event has got in it. There we go. This is the kind of thing I do. This is how, if you want to see if someone's touched an object, remember I said that rectangles provide this method which you can use called contains that says, is this point inside this rectangle? Well, this is how you would detect if something on the screen has been touched, because you basically get the position of the touch item and use it to create a new point. Now, rather irritatingly, the actual point information is what rectangles like, but the position information is expressed as a vector. Now, I don't quite know why they've done that, but it does mean that you have to make this small conversion. So I take the thing, make it into an integer, and make a point out of that. And at this point, the good news is it's the same pixel coordinates. So as far as I'm concerned, this I can then feed into a test to see whether or not the place you're touching is actually inside a rectangle, which I've defined on the screen. And at that point, I can figure things out. And so here, what we're looking at here is get the point. If the state of the point is pressed, then that means we've just had a finger go down. So I then look in the cheese to see if it contains that particular point. And if it does, the finger's just gone down on the cheese, okay. At which point we're beginning the start of possibly a drag operation, or the cheese has been touched. So it's very, very easy. As long as you use a rectangle to express the position of things on the screen, it's very easy to actually use the touch events to detect when things have been touched. And the thing I'm moving towards here is at some point later on, I'll be taking a piece of cheese and flicking it across the screen. So there'll be a touch down, a whole bunch of touch moved, and a touch up. And then I'll fire the cheese off in that direction. That's how it's going to work. Right. And the code for this is all part of the system and freely available. But before I do that, I'll show you just catching the events and using them to fire things off. And this is the Windows Phone Piano, which I created. And again, if you make a fortune selling pianos on the marketplace, then remember Rob, his family and friends, they all need new shoes now. I've been getting messages. And so if I go to my desktop, and we go into touch input, and we go into piano. I'll just close that one down in case it's got some kind of... Yes. So that'll stop cheese going. Now I go get my piano, and we'll take a look at the code. So I'll get rid of you because you just get in the way. I'll make you bigger. What the piano is effectively a piano display, and the position of each key is defined by a rectangle. And I have a little class called key which contains the rectangle on the screen where the key is displayed and a link to the actual sound effect to be played when that key is pressed. So the key structure basically binds this together. And my load content fetches a picture of the key, attaches the sound sample to it, and then puts it in the right place on the screen. And so the idea is that when you hit the key, the sound plays. I'll put it on the emulator first because I'm fairly sure that'll work. Yeah, and I'll do that and I'll press the correct button. So what we'll see now is that effectively I can start playing sound samples when keys are pressed on the screen. And so in a minute or two, it's deployed okay. We'll get ourselves a piano. And I'll just turn it so that it makes a kind of sense from a keyboard. Now, if I lean over, see, that's good.
Very good.
What I put in this is a cheat. If I touch there, it actually plays some piano music, which is pre-recorded, which you can probably hear. This is a cheat key. I'll make it a bit louder so you can hear it. There you go. Now, if you stand looking soulful and touching the keyboard, this can impress people, but probably not that much, OK? The code for that bit is very simple. Effectively, if you touch the top left-hand corner less than 50, then it just plays the media player sample, which is a little piece of music, which sounds quite nice. So I'll turn that off. So what we have here is very, very simple touched input in that I'm only thinking in terms of looking for pressed events. So if you want to do that, steal the piano. To see it work, do you want to see it on the real device? Because everyone... If you want to see it, go purple to see it on the real device.
We've got
some purples, but most people don't care.
It's going
purple, yeah. Right. You want to see the real device, you want to see Robert sweat? Okay, what I'll do is I'll actually stop this.
Yep, you're definitely up for that.
You're up for that, Right, what I'll do is I'll... Is it okay if I use the one that's inside the phone? Yes, it is. So what I'll do... Can you change me over to the other camera?
I would be delighted.
Okay. Because if I use the real device, which you can all see now, hopefully, and fire up the piano, then on the real device... I can play chords, because it's working through that. You get several sound samples being played at once.
Very good.
Now, that isn't worth a round of applause, but it's worth turning purple for. So thank you very much for that. But as far as you're concerned, that shows the system is working. And as from the point of view of dealing with the extra keys, I don't have to do any extra work. I just have to iterate through the collection and make sure that all the events are the ones that I want. The way that that piano works is not particularly good in that... It would be nice if I could get vibrato effects by moving my finger left and right a bit, or I could get slide effects by sliding up the keys, or when I release the key, the note should decay more quickly. Now, you can do all that if you want to. It's just a question of adding more code, because you can pick up the event and you can go, OK, I'll drop the volume of that sound sample straight away. And so you could start using proper sound effect instances to make a really quite nice piano with that.
I suppose we couldn't figure out how hard you'd hit the key to play it louder or softer.
No, there's
well,
no
I guess
way.
You could with the, you know, if you're holding it in hand and you measured the, with the accelerometer, the impact.
That's a very interesting way to do it. The one thing which differs from the original, the Zoom touch input did actually have a pressure value coming back at you, which you don't get on the phone.
Right.
Which we're a bit upset about. But I think it's because they probably had difficulty making it consistent in terms of actually getting the value. So it's not in the in the new version of the framework, but everything else is. But you could make a slide up and down and change the pitch. You make a stylophone type thing, zzz, if you want to. Very easy to do that. And so we've actually seen the piano played. That's jolly good. I'm going to go back and keep on with the slides now. I'd say quit while you're ahead, but I'll let you know when I'm ahead. But I'll quit. So if we keep on going here, playing... No, we don't want that one. We want... touch input. So we know how to get single touch events and we can make a piano very easily. And I was quite surprised because for a certain competing platform that names begins with I, they actually he's waving his arms, he's looking, the Microsoft man is looking worried again. You get piano programs for these things and they'll try and charge you money for some of these. And I knocked it up in XNA in an evening. And so maybe you should try and do that. Try and get some cash for it. But it's very, very easy to write. So we've got that sorted. We're good. We're happy. We're going to keep moving forward too. Flicks. Mm-hmm. What I want to do now is flick things around the screen. Mm-hmm. And to do that, I have to record the time the thing goes down, the movement, and then the end event as well. And the way you make this work is by picking up the touch ID property. And so Cheese Chuck, which is another game based on cheese, which is yet to really hit the marketplace, is the idea is you try and flick the cheese towards the bread, and you get extra points for bouncing off the sides, so you can like in-offs and things. And the idea is to use a touch interface to flick the cheese around. And so we're going to write some code to do that. Well, to do this, actually very simple. Just add some extra flags to keep track of if the cheese has been touched. You never thought you'd see a variable called cheese touch, did you? Well, there it is. It starts off false because the cheese hasn't been touched. We have to record the location, the touch location where the cheese was actually touched. And we want to record the time at which the cheese was touched as well, because we're going to get the speed of the cheese by how fast the player flicks it. So if they do a very slow and then release, the cheese will go slowly. If they do a very quick flick, then the cheese will go further. Okay? So I'm going to record when the cheese is touched so that I can then do a little bit of sums involving the date time of when the cheese is released and get the speed out. So the harder you flick it, the faster it goes.
All right. Okay?
And it's actually very simple, and the nice thing is it works a treat as well. So I do a switch on the state of the touch event, and if we've just got a touch going down, I say, okay, find out where it is. If it's on the cheese, if the cheese has been touched now, then I record the touch position. I set a flag to say, okay, we're in the middle of a cheese touch event, and I record the time.
Yeah. So we've got a question actually asking about gesture support, and I guess this is what we're kind of talking about here, really.
I'm home brewing my own gestures.
It's kind of your own version.
Yes, yeah. I mean, XNA itself does not have gesture support built in. The phone, I believe, does have some gesture support, although I'm not, in terms of the phone platform, not familiar. So I'm making my own gesture support here.
Okay.
So if you wanted to do that, in fact, this would be a really good starting point. So if you do a circle or a cross or whatever, you can start picking that kind of thing up and using it in gameplay. That would be an interesting thing to do, actually,
mm-hmm.
Because you get all the individual points at 30 hertz as you go round. So you can actually pick up where the thing is and then do sensible things with it. I'm doing a single gesture, which is basically a flick. So,
okay.
Yes. That's a very good question. I hadn't thought of that, but you're quite right. This is gesture management, basically. To get the direction, well, I do a little bit of maths, a bit of vector arithmetic. When I get a released event, I say, OK, is the event that's been released the same event as the one that was touched? And I can use this ID property, which is basically an integer, which gets one bigger each time they make a new event. So it just counts up into infinity. So if I have the player's gone, pulled their finger off, I've basically got to work out the direction between that point and that point, which I can do by doing a very simple vector subtraction. So I take the first vector away from the second, and that gives me a vector which defines the direction and the magnitude of the actual flick action. Okay? Having done that, all I have to do next is use the time, figure out how many ticks the time it took for the player to do that drag, and then the shorter that time is, the further I fire the cheese. So the magnitude, I work it out how long since we started dragging the cheese. I then divide a fiddle factor of 30,000.
And how did you establish this fiddle factor, Rob?
Playtesting.
All right.
It's the only way. You have to playtest at this point. Because the good news is that once you've playtested, because everything happens at the same speed on the platform, irrespective of which version you get, it'll work. It'll look fine. So you play test on a single phone, boom, 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 and at that point, you're away.
All right.
It'll just work. So, yeah, that number was, yeah.
Try it and see.
Had to be. There's no other way to do it. That's one of the things about games that worries some people, and there's no hard and fast test. You give it to a guy and say, did you enjoy that? And if he says no, then you change some bits of it. You make it easier or harder, you add bits, whatever you need to do. And so there you go. This is basically another thing which I did. In the draw behavior, I basically said, okay, if the cheese has been touched, I'm going to draw you in red. Otherwise, I'm going to draw you in white. So the player can see when their fingers hit the cheese and make it hot by touching it, as it were. So there's a slide there called Hot Cheese. This is just great stuff, isn't it? It's what you want.
Cheese friction.
Cheese friction. Well, the other thing is...
Another phrase I never thought of.
That's right. Once the cheese starts moving, it has to slow down. So again, another fiddle factor, which is the friction value, and that effectively slows the cheese down. So I flick it, and it'll move for a while, then slow down and stop. And you could also do interesting things to do with, if you're running a golf game, you might want to modulate the direction of the ball depending on the arrangement of the green. And it's exactly the same technology, but you'd use the position of the ball in the grid to interpolate some height or direction value and then just change the friction accordingly. And once you've done that, you can flick your cheese. Everyone wants to see this. So let's get back onto the desktop, and I'll get it working on the emulator. And then what I'll do is I'll switch to the version which I know, because we have been having problems with the downloads into the phone. It might be that I'm using the wrong way to do that. So this is Cheese Chucker. And all the code is exactly what I've shown you in the presentation. So when it's pressed, let's make that a bit larger. When it's pressed, I get my point that says, are we in the cheese? If we are, record where it was, set the flag, and then record the time. When it's released, we do the math, there's my magic fiddle factor, and we can see the effect of changing that, actually. If I now fire it up inside the emulator, and I better turn you into landscape mode, otherwise you aren't going to look quite right. Portrait, that is, sorry. If I now touch the cheese, then I can do a very slow flick and release, and it goes in that direction. If I do a quicker flick, then it goes all over the place. So, you know, you can do quick flicks or you can do little flicks. The game end...
This will look better on the camera, actually, because it doesn't reproduce.
That's true, it's
so
leaping
well.
About, isn't it? I apologise for that. What Andy's really saying is he wants to see it work on the real device.
That's what I'm saying.
OK, so what we'll do is we'll do that. Can you flip the camera over, sir?
Yeah.
Chucking cheese.
OK, there we go.
Right. The thing that impresses me about this as well is the sheer speed with which it actually loaded the program and ran it. So if I just touch the cheese and do that...
Nothing happens.
I can give it a quick flick, or I can give it a little flick, or a bigger... Come on. There you go. So I'm getting hold of the cheese, and I am flicking it, and you're hopefully seeing... Can you see that behind my... Oh, because you're anything, can you? Apologies. This is not optimal, but if I get hold of the cheese, it turns red. There you go. And I'm now going to go like that and let go, and it'll fire off in that direction. Okay?
Yep, excellent.
So we are chucking cheese. Now, you've seen cheese chucked on a window. That is the first time in the world that cheese has been chucked on a Windows phone. Okay? All bow down. For I am the cheese chucker of greatness. And again, that's another phrase I didn't think I'd be using today. But the bottom line, as far as you're concerned, is any kind of flick game that you want to actually create, any kind of game where you're actually getting the user to flick things around, or as someone has very cleverly pointed out on the questions, you know how to do it. Little point to bear in mind about this, if you're using several different game components, each of which want to pick up the touch, do remember that each time you ask the touch panel for its status, it will effectively rebuild the list of touch events. So you only see the touchdown event in the first list. So what you must make your game do is get the touch event list and then cache that for use by all the game objects that need to use touch. So don't repeatedly call the getState method, because if you do that, you'll get the next set of touch events, and so you'll start missing things. So do bear that in mind. It isn't a problem. It isn't a problem until you fall over it like I did. But if you read that slide and apply it, then you won't have that problem. So do remember that. You have to basically make a little cache, a little data member which says, this is where my thing is. So, OK. Let's do some review, OK? First one, Windows Phone. And that one, the first question is so laughably easy, we won't actually, because our audience are so clever, they'll know that one straight away. The answer is they do have the same touch events, so that one should turn green. And four events can be tracked at once. That's also laughably easy, because we've said that it's completely true. Okay, so...
It's just the big question.
Big question. Each touch event has a unique ID and a status. If you think that's true, you go...
Purple.
If you think it's false, you go yellow.
Yellow.
And we've got a sea of... Yeah, we're going to have to take a picture of that, because it's quite attractive, it is. But it's a lot of purple appearing, which is nice to see, because that's exactly what's happening. The touch event has a unique ID and a status, which you can then use to track the event through its life cycle of touchdown, moved, and released.
Right.
So any kind of draggy game. You can use this as well if you want to pan round a large view. You can draw an enormous texture, bigger than the view pane, and then you can actually catch a touch event and have the player drag the thing around. You can also do two-finger drag, where you can detect... That sounds really weird, two-finger drag, but we'll move on. Where you detect two fingers going down, and then detect the dragged event for that, for panning as well. And you could even do the scissor pinch.
Right.
Just by getting these events and tracking them.
Was that that prize question, was it?
That was the prize question.
That was the prize question. And so, David Price, you are our winner. So please send us a private message, and we'll get that prize to you. Well
done. Thank you very much. Next two questions. Your game can detect when the position has moved. Of course it can. Otherwise, we couldn't flick cheese. And finally, the touch panel only works on Fridays.
I know. I only work on Fridays.
Well, we all know that.
Yeah, yeah.
That's just put in there because if I didn't put that, I'd have a whole bunch of correct ones.
And we couldn't have that.
And we couldn't have that. That would be terrible. So the touch panel works every day of the week and doesn't ever have a day off, which is very nice. So you've now got all you need to put touch on your Windows Phone game. That's it. You can make it as complex as you like. You can do multi-touch input, pinching, zooming, panning, all that. Very easy. So we're on the final home stretch now with 28 minutes to go. And so one last bit of content, which should just round things off nicely, I do believe. Is my mouse dead, or what's happening here? Oh, here we go. It's just, I think I'm ahead of myself. Right, final thing. This is something which it's worth mentioning. I don't want to explore it in too much detail because you can go off and do lots of things with the guide. But for now, it's kind of important because in XNA land, on the PC and the Xbox 360, you can make use of keyboard input because there's a keyboard type. You can plug a USB keyboard into an Xbox 360 and you can then get key presses, and you can do the same with the keyboard on the PC running the Xbox, the XNA game. So what I wanted to do, just for completeness, is give you an insight into how you get around the fact there's no keyboard on a Windows phone. And to do this, you just have to use the guide, which is a part of XNA which hasn't been exposed on a mobile platform before. The Zune HD did not have guide support, but the guide on the Windows phone is going to make life terribly interesting, because what it means is you can do the whole Xbox Live thing. Gamers can sign in, pick up their gamer tag. In fact, it's effectively bound to them as owners of the phone. And so we can use the guide to do all kinds of wonderful stuff. But for now, all I want to do is use it for reading things. In Xbox 360, you press the jewel in the middle of the gamepad, and the guide comes up, tells you you're signed in, and you can do all kinds of things. On the PC, you press the home key, and the XNA game's running, and you get the guide popping up. And it's all powered by the game tag, current gamer tag attached to the machine. In the case of Windows Phone, you can do guide-type things. You can sort of manage that side of things, but you can also use this as a way in which you can get text into your game programs. Now, because you can do Silverlight, maybe you won't be doing that much sort of text input, but you may want to get people's names if they've done high scores. You may want to start getting some bits and pieces in there as text. And so, for completeness' sake, this is actually worth mentioning. As far as the phone's concerned, you turn it on, and you're in as that.
But how do you actually enter your gamer? How do you associate your gamer tag with a phone?
Do you know? It just did it.
Okay.
If you have a gamer tag, it's associated with an Xbox Live account.
Right.
When you buy your new Windows phone and turn it on, first thing it asks you for is what's your Xbox Live account.
Right.
So you go, you can do it later, but it's one of the things that's asked after you bought the phone. Once the phone knows who you are, from the point of view of your Xbox Live account, that's tied to your game account, gamer tag, by some back-end server magic. So effectively, I was actually quite shocked because that avatar looks a lot like me. Good grief, it is me. Because it had pulled it down off the server and put it onto my phone. And it all just happens as though by magic. Right. As far as we're concerned, and as far as XNA game writers are concerned, it means you have like a captive audience. They're already there.
Does mean, of course, you know, can't lend your phone to somebody else for them to play.
I'm just thinking about the phrase, lend your phone to somebody
else. Yeah, it's not something you're going to do, is it?
Are you mad? What, this?
No. Okay.
That's my phone. That's a cold, dead hand. I get that. Oh, that's not going to happen. No. They can borrow the iPhone. They can now, anyway. Moving on. Okay, using the guide, it's worth knowing how to do this in case you want to do any kind of other interaction. What I have here is a very, very simple banner program that just displays a text message. So you can hold this up to talk to people across the bar, all that kind of thing, if you do that kind of thing. In fact, it would be very simple to modify this to make a scrolly banner where the thing scrolls across the phone. Simply by, because you remember that we're moving things around by using the position of the drawer. We can slide things around very easily.
Is this how you did the back in 10 minutes?
Yes, that's right. But effectively, the text that we're going to put into our back in 10 minutes, display you've been seeing in the intervals, is by using XNA to draw it for us and then getting the text from the guide keyboard. It's worth a small digression here. In Silverlight, you just draw stuff. text boxes have got fonts associated with them. You pick the size and the style and away it goes. In XNA, if you want to draw text, you have to effectively roll your own font. And so what you do is you add a content item, which is a font of a particular size and particular typeface. And the content manager will call a method which will build all the bitmaps that font needs as an item of content and push them into your game. As far as you're concerned, the effort you've got to do this is zero. You just say, add a new font to my game, and the system says, how big is it, what font size do you want, and away you go. But once you've done that, you then actually load that font up and display it on the screen. So as a kind of aside, here is how you display the message on the screen. Begin your drawing operations, use the font you've loaded, take the message that you actually want to show on the screen, put it on the screen at a certain position, and in this case we're drawing the text in green. So that's effectively how you put text. If you're an XNA programmer, you will know this. If you're a Silverlight programmer, then it's a bit of extra work. But once you've done it, that's it. You can then just use this thing to draw the thing. And you can draw all over the place, and you can draw in different colors, and you can stack drawing up to get fake 3D effects by using opacity. You can put fake shadows behind as well. It's all kinds of good things you can do. As far as we're concerned, that's how we draw our text. And in terms of actually putting the guide up, I'm using that trick I mentioned earlier. If I touch the panel, then the number of touches on the panel goes up from zero to some other value. So touching the panel will cause the guide to pop up, and then I can start thinking about typing in my message. And to show the guide, first thing I check is the guide already there? If it is, I have no work to do. If it isn't, I do a bit of housekeeping now to get my guide up on the screen and tell the guide what to actually do when you've finished. So player one, this is only player one on the phone. In real life, your Xbox can display the guide to whoever's actually pressed the button on their gamepad. So if you've got a four-player multiplayer game on one console, they can each pull their own guide entries up by pressing their button. But as far as we're concerned, don't want to do that. Just use player one. This is a bit like if you put a message box up, it has a caption. That's message input. And there's a little bit of instruction there to go in the guide box as well, which is get a new message for the display. This is the thing I'm giving you to put in the input box to start with. And I give you a callback to say, when you finish displaying the guide, call this method, and then I'll take what you've given me and put it on the screen. Okay? So this is bringing together a whole bunch of principles that we've already seen all over the place in terms of firing events and binding events to objects that want to tell me things when something has happened. So that's all well and good, and away we go. This goes through it in slow-mo. Check for a touch on the screen. Is the guide visible? Display it if it isn't. And then begin the keyboard input. And the next one should say, yeah, keyboard done is a method we're going to have to create which will respond to the fact they've finished typing in text. Okay? And keyboard done just takes this result object, asks the guide to get the keyboard information from that result, and then if this thing says, okay, I find your result, I've not given you a null, set the message to whatever's been typed in. Again, steal this code and just use it. It'll just work. Okay? The one thing you have to watch is if the user cancels the guide input, what you get back will be null. So if you try and use that to do things with, your program will start throwing exceptions of the null reference type, which are not good. So do bear that one in mind. And I think the next thing will be a demo of Big Banner. So what I'll do is I'll drift back here, and I'll go onto the desktop. This might be the last demo we do today.
Woo.
Woo. I wonder if it'll work. That's wrong thing, Rob. Of course it will work. Hasn't everything? Yeah, Big Banner. So I'll bring it in. I'll tidy up the desktop so you can see it easily.
In your own time.
It's when the fan comes on in the computer, you know that stuff's happening. I'll just double click here so you can see the code. Here it is. I'll make it a tad bigger. And so there's my banner. This is the code where we actually load the font. So the font's being brought in so I can draw stuff. And my update method, which is the place where the game actually does things, is going to check for some touches on the keyboard. And if it's greater than naught, we're going to go into the routine I've already shown you. So if I run this up, we'll do it on the emulator for ease of doing. away we go. The interface is quite nice. It's very slick and very smooth, and it does exactly what you want. So there's hello from Rob. If I flip the thing that way, if I now just touch the screen, then up comes my keyboard. Message input is the banner on the top, then a little beneath there. Enter new message for display. Because I fed the old message back in, I can now go doink, 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 doink. And I can now put in the word spoon. No good reason. Click on OK. It says spoon. OK. And if I want to change it again, I now just go back into there and I just go goodbye or whatever. B-Y-E. If I cancel, well, let's just click on OK. And it goes. So you now have a way in which you can read text. It's extremely workable, and it leads on to all kinds of fun and games you can have with the guide a little bit later on. So there you are, back to the presentation. If I can figure out which button to press, that one there should do nicely.
So you're saying actually there's limited scope for wanting text in most XNA games, I guess.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, the interesting thing about text input for XNA is that on the Xbox, the PC type style, it's actually quite hard work because you're polling the keyboard at regular intervals, and so you have to actually write your own edge detection code. So you have to say when the key state goes from up to down, a key has been pressed, and then I have to wait for it to go back up again to get another one so I can repeat the keys. So it's actually quite a tedious business to get text in. Although I think that it's something which gets used quite a surprisingly large amount in the games. And so, for that point of view, well worth a mention. So let's keep going on. Little things to bear in mind when you use the guide. The draw and the update methods are still firing. So although the guide's on the screen, you're still being asked to do draw and update. The user can't necessarily see them, and you're really going to get a very, very upset player if the guy pops up and they instantly lose a life because they can't control their spaceship or whatever. So what you should do is make your game state machine actually either pause the game or stop updating life-important things during guide interactions. And I tend to have a special state in the game which is guide visible, which stops the game from doing anything daft. If you want to actually check whether the guide can be seen, then there is a flag visible which we've already used to determine when the guide should be popped up. And you can test that, and away you go. So, very quick review.
Sorry.
Last review of the day.
Right.
Isn't this exciting? Oh, please yourself. Windows Phone can use a physical keyboard from XNA. How many people think that's true? Remember, it's purple for true and yellow for not true. There's an interesting sideline to this question. People think it's not true, which I'm inclined to go along with. The Windows Phone platform, as far as I'm aware, does not allow for external Bluetooth keyboards to be added. As far as we're concerned, we get the actual... If you're a Windows Mobile person, you could get a Bluetooth keyboard and use that type. As far as I'm aware, the Windows Phone does not support that. So there's no such thing as a physical keyboard, which means that that square is going to turn red, and everyone that said yellow, are you with me on this, is correct. So the,
right,
you can't
well
use a physical keyboard. Thank you very much for that. So, here's this prize-winning question. Sprite fonts are created on the Windows Phone. The font is created on the phone. True or false? Purple for true, yellow for false. Where do the sprite fonts come from? There's a good mix on this one. This is obviously, people are thinking about these questions. This is nice to see. So I'm going to click the button so it tells me what's right and what's wrong. The answer is that's not true. The actual font itself is created by XNA inside the Visual Studio content management piece. And what it does is it effectively gets the TrueType font off your PC, renders a whole bunch of images, which are the actual bitmap designs, and then puts those into a compressed file that gets pushed into the device to draw from. So the font... It's interesting, you can draw a font in an XNA game that doesn't exist on your Windows Phone device. You can also, and this is even more interesting, break copyright. Because if you use a font on your PC to make a sprite font in XNA, then you're effectively making a copy of that font, and you need to watch that. If you actually have bought some fairly expensive fonts for your typographical whatevers, they pop up as TrueType on your machine, you put them in a game, but you're now using that thing in the context which is not the same as it was supplied for. So do bear in mind that that is potentially an issue. XNA ships with a font specifically designed to be free of those constraints. And it's a very nice looking font as well. It's the one I used for the scrolly banner you saw on the screen. It's also one I've used in the program. It's supplied and picked up by default when you make a brand new sprite font. But it's interesting how when you're writing games and selling stuff, you need to be mindful of these things. I've mentioned sound samples and I've mentioned images, same kind of thing. Putting content in games, great idea, but make sure you've got a really good handle on the copyright side. Because otherwise you might find your games up there for a few weeks, selling really well, and then someone writes from a font company says, we noticed that you're using whatever it is in your game in breach of copyright. Please send us your money and your house. And so, yeah, be mindful of that. Worth being aware of. Okay. Next question. Sprite fonts are based on character designs. Absolutely they are. That's going to go green. An XNA game stops when the guide is displayed. Nope, it keeps going. It's your job to stop it. And the guide provides a callback to deliver the string. Yes, it does. So that's me. Hit the end stops. I think that's as far as we go. We're supposed to finish for a wrap-up around 10:02, and it's
10:02.
So thank you very much for taking part. Thank you very much. I hope you've enjoyed the day. Doesn't seem like 6 hours, does it, Andy?
It doesn't.
I hope it doesn't seem. We'll be back fresh as daisies. 1 o'clock tomorrow, PS, Pacific Standard Time, taking questions off the forum, interacting, looking for more jokes coming down on the text. Please remember that. I've got some really good ones, actually, if I drop back.
Finish with a joke.
Finish with always. One of my theories is you should always leave them wanting. Actually, always leave them wanting more. But in, oh gosh, but in my case, it's just always leave them. Okay. Here's that's interesting, but we can't use that one. and I don't think it's possible anyway. Okay. Some people like it. Here's a joke. How do you change a light bulb in logical programming? You imply that it is changed. How do you change a light bulb in concurrent programming? You take the lamp to a secure area so nobody else can change the light. This guy has been on the web. I like this, but I haven't got time for it. Let's find a quick one. Yes, three physicists walk into a bar. With that much brain power between them, you would think the others would have ducked when the first one hit his head. Yeah, this is all good stuff. It's all going on the blog, robmiles.com. I'm going to sit down tonight when I get back from the pub and type all these in, okay? All of them. I'll leave the numbers off so nobody will know it was you, but I'll type in all the clean ones and then we'll use that as an amazing... Man, they're looking upset. Sorry about that, Jeff. Never mind next time. And then we'll use that as the basis of the wit and wisdom of the sessions, which will start on Thursday. Thursday's going to be great. Thursday's going to be big. We're going to be giving you lots more on the Silverlight, including stuff that...
I'd say the beginning of the Thursday session, well, we're going to cover something we didn't cover today as a bit of a warm-up, but then we're going to get into the application lifecycle. Now, this is crucially important, not just for Silverlight, but also for XNA developers, because there's something unique about the way that apps run on Windows Phone, and that is the fact that they don't run on Windows Phone all the time. And this is the lifetime you have to manage. So, for example, if the lock screen comes down, or you take a call, or you fire up some of the other features that the phone offers in terms of accessing things like the contacts list or the maps or this kind of thing, when you're doing that, your app actually is terminated by the system. So, and there's all such cute stuff for saving state and then restoring state to maintain the illusion to your users that your application is running continuously. This is crucially important stuff for anybody wanting to do Windows Phone development, and that's going to be the major topic, as long as a lot of other interesting stuff like notifications and things like that, and web service access, cloud service access. So we're going to look at all that on Thursday. So plenty of great content to come. There's all going to be a lot of interesting demos and some interesting content.
other thing on Thursday is Marketplace. If you want to know how to sell your apps, if you want to know how to, if you buy a brand new phone, how do you plug it in? How do I get to put apps on there? How do I register? What's the process by which I can get my code onto here most of the time? Then we're covering that in session four. That's going to be quite a big one as well.
Yep. Yeah.
So please come back on Thursday. Tell a friend if you have one. and it would be great to see you. But from Andy and myself for today, thank you for being a fantastic multicolored audience. And we'll say bye-bye.
Thanks very much. Goodbye.